Let the record reflect, Councilman Smiley, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, Councilman Sheldon, Councilman Bell. Dave, did you find? Okay. Councilman Street, Councilman Cartier, and I want to thank Chrissy Roberts for stepping in today to take the notes. We have Councilwoman Diller and Councilman Hollins on their way, as well as Councilman Weiner. Entertain a motion?
Motion to approve the minutes of the previous meeting of October 16th.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Minutes approved. All right, I am going to go out of motion order just a little bit here just to give a little bit more time. Second item on the agenda is under Council District 7.
Yes, this is the plan of the Lincoln Center, Newcastle 100, down off of Route 7, the Bear Area. This has been a plan has been around for quite a while. I will say that since the first meeting of the 740 Alliance that I attended, where Mr. Heisler presented, the people then in that area have been very excited about it and looking forward to it. Believe it or not, I attribute that to three things. One, it's a very good plan. Two, Mr. Heisler is very sincere, presents very well, and has a great reputation. And three, and the biggest one, is he didn't try to take Lowe's from Eaton Square. So this is a mixed use. It will be apartments. It's going to be business. So that's it. If you have any questions, Mr. Heisler is here. Again, it's been around for a few years now.
Questions for members of council? And also let the record reflect that Co-Chair Retta has joined us. Co-Chair Retta?
Yeah. How come he didn't try and take Lowe's?
He's looking for Home Depot.
Councilman Cartier?
Yeah, I'd just like to see the site plan. It looks like Mr. Heisler has, you have the site plan with you.
This is the most recent unit. This is what you're talking about?
Yeah, the overall.
Plan view.
If you could just identify the various, uses in the project site.
My name is Jerome Heisler. I'm the manager and partner of the Raybull Group. We have Route 1 here, Route 7 here, Route 40 down here. It's basically three components. You have a residential corridor over here, an office corridor through here, and then a mixed-use corridor in the center with retail along the front. There's the focus of this project is about 50% residential, about 40% residential, 40% office, with the balance being retail. So it's not retail oriented. That's the smallest component. And that differentiates this from other mixed use projects. There's enough retail in the area. We thought by creating an employment center that could go about mixing the uses would be a better way to do it, especially with Deladon now converting to retail. We were way before them, and we had no interest in Lowe's, just to put that on the record. But equally important, we're focusing on traffic mitigation on this site. It's a state-of-the-art traffic mitigation program, and the EPA Mid-Atlantic region has been very interested in our stormwater management features. We have over 130 best management practices on the site, so there's not a basin here. It's really state-of-the-art. And the County Planning Department and DENREC ought to be complimented for taking a leadership role and allowing us to do this.
Under what base zoning are you able to carry this forward?
OR.
OR.
So it's by right. It's not. We got a couple variances, as everybody knows I usually do, but it's by right in OR.
And the OR zoning dictates the mix of uses, or you have flexibility?
It has percentages, and that's one of the issues. We did go in and get a variance waiver to put more residential in there. So there's a percentage. You could do more retail. Again, we weren't really focusing on retail.
How many acres is the site in total?
56 acres.
56 acres.
And is you can do 90% coverage on 56 acres in OR.
Is there any civic space or parkland, or I'm wondering if you could describe that?
Originally, there's supposed to be. I'm not sure what's going to happen. J.P. Morgan There's supposed to be a state park right next to it, but J.P. Morgan, this is a residual property, just to go back, for the First USA site that was approved back in early 2000. They were supposed to put a major data processing center and call center there, about 600,000 feet. They decided just to put a data center there, which is up the site from us. And in between, there's supposed to be a state park on about 60 acres. I don't know that it'll ever come about, even though there's still a contract. That site is so important for financial transactions internationally. They're very, very careful about what goes on that site. If I actually walk on that site, they'll come out and almost attack me. I refuse to go in that building because security is so difficult. Although I hear it's going to be more difficult here shortly.
Just quickly before we get too far, Dave, would you like this general manager call, or would you like to talk real briefly about the map and where the project is being located and the level of it?
David Kovrakin, General Manager, Department of Land Use. The upper sticky is the arrow pointing to the general site. It is in Strategy 1 of the state strategies map. It's very consistent with where you would want to see growth and infill development within Newcastle County in conjunction with state planning.
Councilman Weiner?
Yes. What's the total square footage of each of the elements and the total square footage? Roughly.
The total square footage of the buildable area without garages is about 1.6 million. If all the elements, I'd have to go to the plan.
Not a problem. Can you talk about walkability and transit orientation?
Right. We were one of the first to do this. We got DART involved with this project before it was even designed. And as a result, we can actually take a bus through this whole project. One of the things we learned was that if you have a bus stop here, and this is where the bus stop was going to be originally, people aren't going to walk from here over to there.
So more than a 5-minute walk.
Right. So basically, we can take a bus through this whole subdivision on the perimeter and get it done. And that's really critical. So we involved DART. We talked to Wilmapco a little bit about strategies for walkability, the width of sidewalks, and so on. So we've really tied into that. It's all private streets on the interior, so we have a little bit more flexibility with setbacks and roadways.
And specifically, can you drill down in terms of the bike ped plan for both the site and how it interconnects with the roadway system around it?
The bike ped plan is just an aisleway on the side, that's all. Because we don't want them on the sidewalks, but we want them in the cartways. But again, traffic calming is something we've been doing for over a decade and a half. So we've programmed this for traffic calming, so we would expect bikes to be part of the general traffic in the community.
And there will be, you're going to help improve, pay your fair share of sidewalk improvements on the main roads, perimeters?
Well, we have to put a sidewalk up here.
And you just said Bear Christiana Road.
Right, that's Route 7.
Route 7, okay.
It already exists, so we really don't, we have to change it a little bit, but the improvements were already put there by First USA, J.P. Morgan, when they did it, and we're just piggybacking on that.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Councilman Street.
1-7. Where's 4?
Right down here.
Right down. There's another parcel.
That's at 740.
The Delazan site is this corner right here.
You can walk to the new Lowe's.
That's a library. The library's over here. The Bear Library's right over here.
Yeah.
Governor Square.
There's some questions, Councilman Cartier.
It's a very impressive. I mean, what type of build out do you anticipate? How many years? You know, you're probably looking at over a decade, perhaps. I don't know.
Well, if the economy doesn't come back, maybe longer than that. If the Delaware, you know, we're seeing a little differential between the Delaware economy and the rest of the United States right now. If you assume we're going to come back, you know, I would think we're intending breaking ground next year on parts of it, but it's going to take a while. It's not done overnight.
In that regard, what phase are you going to approach initially, and how's it going to tend to build out?
I think we'll start over here. These are stacked townhomes, so we'll start in a residential component initially and move forward. Again, this isn't a big box. You're not going to see a Lowe's or a gigantic supermarket there. It's not set up for that. So we're not, again, that commercial component grows inside of it. It's just not part of it. It's part of the inside some of these buildings. So that's how it is.
It's amenity retail.
Right.
To support
right.
the
and
uses.
I'm not even sure we'll build all of that. It'll probably go more office in the end.
Okay.
Because I don't think we have that type of demand.
Councilman Weiner?
Yeah. Just want to compliment you on the amenity commercial or amenity retail. And I hope that the land use department and other developers will consider a lighter touch when it comes to commercial and mixed use, because it better fits the 21st century realities.
Councilman Bell, who did have his hand up, and Councilman Weiner just
grabbed
his
hand.
That's
what
I'm
sorry.
When you talk about like state-of-the-art traffic mitigation, you use the example of bus transportation throughout, but are there other examples or other things that you've worked on, in particular like the Route 740 corridor and Route 7?
That's
down
a great question.
You're allowed to text.
we actually have something recorded on this. What we did was we started with the mitigation agreement. This started about 5 years ago. We started with a mitigation agreement that was done over at the medical center about a decade ago. And then we modified it. And just like you approach investing or should approach investing with diversification, we are trying a mitigation plan that is made up of little buckets diversifying different aspects. So we have bus vouchers. We have carpooling. We have a van pool, walk and bike, house, work housing. So people who live on the site work there. In our model, in the transportation model, they assume that only two people out of the 500 dwelling units on that site will actually work on that site. But we think we can entice more to do that. Shift changes by having people come in before 7 o'clock and leaving before 4 o'clock. Subsidized car family or subsidized car fare, car sharing. So we have all these buckets. We're putting over the project between $1.5 to $2 million into a fund to help subsidize these mitigation aspects. And thereby, we're doing one additional thing. We have on-site, I can leave this with you, Councilman, on-site and off-site mitigation. So since we have St. Andrews further up Route 40, we're actually going to try to put bus vouchers down there to get people out of St. Andrews to start taking bus instead of using their car. So we're going to try to mitigate so many trips off of different sites. And this is a broader mitigation approach than traditionally is done. The very first thing we're going to do with our mitigation money is build a carpool model where you could go on, and if you were going between site A and site B, your home, find other people that may be going into that area, type on there and do that. Other areas such as Arlington, Virginia, have these type of mitigation approaches, and we want to sort of incorporate them into Delaware. And so this money we're putting up is going to be for all, in some parts, for all of Delaware, just not Lincoln Center. So it's a different approach, and it's one that Department of Planning here and as well as the state are starting to look at really closely, because if they can begin mitigating trips from a site, you change the whole dynamics of traffic. But more important, by just having us make a road improvement from going from E to D doesn't solve anything. But if you were to take that money, put it in a general fund, educate people how to get to their places more efficiently in carpooling or other methods, or subsidize it for people who can't afford it, we all of a sudden change the whole dynamic of transportation, and you don't have to make heavy investments in the road or the state building. So that's really the approach of this. It's a different approach.
Sounds like a very futuristic concept.
It's really not.
Any questions for members of the public? Yeah. Councilman Weiner?
Yeah, I just want to comment that harkens on the level service monitoring mitigation agreement that the county and the state adopted, where we try to incentivize people out of single occupancy vehicles by creating user-friendly connections between commercial, office, and residential. I was pleased to have worked on that, and it harkens back to that.
But we actually have to monitor.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hoisman. Councilman Street.
I know apparently there's no opposition from the communities in somebody else's district, and I know there's already road improvements, significant road improvements being done on Route 7. But the level buildup off of Route 7 in that area, and the nightmare of getting in and out of there during peak travel time now. This is going to be much, much worse when all this is finally built up. So.
Thank you. That's it? Okay. Moving back to the first item on the agenda on the resolution.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry. And also thank you for dressing up for our meeting today.
At least I put a shirt with a collar on it.
Yeah. Okay, backing up item on our agenda today. It's under my sponsorship. This is actually in my new Council Matic district. Councilman Powers had been working on this previously. One of the things that I had spoke to, obviously, the previous administration about was trying to, I'm sure like many of you did also, about your new areas in this redistricting process, is trying to make sure that issues that have been sitting out there for a long time and had been out there to try to get these resolved. And I will commend previous administration on this, that they worked very hard. Wendy Dander worked on this, try to get this done. We have the Parkers here today. They were directly affected by this. There was a project down there in the area that, you know, there was a lot of bad problems with it. And what ended up doing was is allowing the stormwater to be on a different parcel and therefore flooding, and just that it was a very, very bad situation. And inadvertently, I know GM Culver might have a couple little comments he probably could add on this also, because he's worked on it and seems to be the only one left in the room right now.
Yeah, so David Culver, General Manager at Department of Land Use. By way of background, this is a very, not that old of a problem, but back from the 80s, when Frenchtown Woods was being developed, there was a residual parcel, and back during that time frame, those residual parcels were retained by the developer, not as open space, but as a stormwater function, or something along those lines. There was a residual parcel here that was owned by the Julians, maintained it for many years, which affected the stormwater that came off of the end of Frenchtown Woods onto this parcel, then eventually onto the Parker's parcel. A couple years ago, that parcel was sold to another party who made changes on that parcel, which was in conflict to the recorded plan for the stormwater management of Frenchtown Woods onto this parcel, which caused some aggravated flooding within the area. That parcel was violated by the Department of Land Use. That owner went through a series of different fixes to try to correct that parcel, including a subdivision of that parcel. None of those have been successful thus far, and we got us to this point where Councilman Powers and some other parties also are working on how to solve the stormwater issue and the flooding that was affecting the Parkers. I'm not sure of all the details of the final arrangements within the document because that was handled by the law department, but I believe what will happen is I'm going from memory, that the parcel will become a county parcel. Mm-hmm. There will be a lot subdivided off. Some of it, I believe, will be given to the Parkers. Another parcel will go back to the bank to satisfy the note that's remaining on the parcel, and the rest will become a permanent stormwater management easement and a natural area for Newcastle County. That's the general detail of it. I don't know the specifics. I don't know the mechanism of how that all works ultimately, but I think the resolution is necessary for us to accept the land so we can start that process to solve the flooding downstream, and this will also relieve Frenchtown Woods from any future drainage issues of people changing that parcel. So ultimately, this will correct a problem that is now not legal under the code, but was legal back during the 1980s when you did subdivision of land. And there's still some of these little parcels out there, just these residual lands that really don't have any value, but they are there for stormwater management or whatever else was necessary for those original subdivisions. So I can't answer the specifics on the settlement arrangements, but that is a general overview of how we got to this point tonight.
Exactly. And inadvertently, like I said, landowners were harmed by this process and this development down there, and land use, you know, you did your part in it, Special Services has done theirs, and law has worked, you know, very hard on this, and commend Wendy Danner on this for really having to get a hold of the courts and work with the landowners to get this to a resolution and a fact where we can, you know, try to rectify a little bit. This is not bringing back, you know, at all restoring to the Parkers, you know, what was lost through this whole process, but it's at least trying to rectify a very bad situation down there. And ultimately, this is the only rectifiable source that we could have seeked on this and taken care of this issue?
I think ultimately they can do it because this solves everybody's issues within that area. It's just one of those situations where that parcel of land, when it was sold, there was an encumbrance on it. I don't know if that was ever fully related to the buyer at the time or through the settlement. I'm not quite sure those details, but ultimately this did create a problem both with the Parkers and also with the residents of Frenchtown Woods, because if that drainage doesn't go off, that property would eventually back up into the Frenchtown Woods area.
So
this, I believe, will put to rest that drainage issue on that part of Route 40 and Old County Road.
Right. By correcting the drainage, the problem in the way they had installed some of it in there.
That's correct.
Questions for members of council? Councilman Cartier?
So this legal kind of process called a deed in lieu of, I guess, fines or whatever? Is that he's surrendering the property, the deed to us?
He literally...
I'm just trying to get a handle on the legal process that enables us to take this piece of ground.
Wendy had to negotiate with the bank.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. You can fill in the blank with deed in lieu of sheriff sale or other confiscatory county government action.
So just to return, we're going to acquire 45 acres, plus or minus, to basically go in and renovate the stormwater management system?
This will take care of the stormwater. It'll take care of the other parcel that has to be attributed back, as Mr. Culver said, and then another small portion over to the side for the Parkers. So.
Okay.
But we'll only have to pick up the stormwater management side. And we will have, if you haven't received the fiscal note and your packet, we will have that available later tonight because Ed did send that through earlier. As we know, all ordinances have to have the fiscal note on. Ed, do you remember offhand? Was it in there, George? It was? Okay, good. It did make it in. Okay, great.
And the ultimate finance. Basically, the mowing, according to Trustee Services, they estimated $500,000 a year for mowing twice a year.
Right.
And the pipe that's there right now is 20 years old and it has a 50 year of life. So
right.
If you look at inflation, maybe in 30 years from that pipe may cost, was it $24,000, $25,000
to fix
that pipe.
Exactly.
And that's up to 30 years from
now. Yep.
Have we looked at sheep?
Sheep?
I have some of them.
Very good. All right. Well, thank you very much. And
a lot of counties do that.
Next item on the agenda, Councilwoman Kilpatrick, presentation on workforce housing.
Thank you. We just have a small presentation today on workforce housing. Mara's Landing, which is located on Newport Gap Pike in the 3rd District. This is the first virtually completed workforce housing community. They're under the original ordinance, which means that they have the ability to rent some units. There are three sizes in here. They range from 2,000 square feet to 3,000 square feet. There are low income, moderate income, and the traditional units all located together. 27, do you have? Oh, okay. No, that's fine. There are 27 units. It was originally going to be a small 14-unit development. When workforce housing was implemented, the developer, which is Mara, asked to replace his plan with a workforce housing plan. Almost all of the units, the traditional units, are sold. Unfortunately, the workforce housing units did not sell, but almost all of them are rented. The developer says that with the smallest units that it actually cost him more to build than what he could put them on the market for. With the moderate units, there were problems with the 15-year issue as to profit and what could or couldn't, the formula that goes with resale. But the community is an absolutely beautiful community. I think that we should hold this as a standard to most developments going in, whether they're workforce housing or other townhouse communities. There are no boxes Everything has an architectural design to it. The insides are beautiful in all of the units. They have quality construction, quality cabinets, floor, wood floors. I can't say that I have been more impressed with a development in a long, long time. He did a beautiful job.
If I may, here's a couple samples of some of the units, all type of different types of construction. They have it broken down to A, B, C, and D units. This is a C unit, the bigger unit, which runs about $389,000. This is the B unit that runs about $394,000. And this is the A unit that's running normal on a normal circumstances, about $340,000, not including it. An N unit runs a little bit more, and garage options and so on and so forth. This is the house plan A, which is the 339 unit, is the one that conforms with workforce housing, which again is a little bit less. Reason being is they have to conform with the HUD guidelines of mid 200,000 number, okay, which is the ceiling. Again, as mentioned by Ms. Kilpatrick, I think one of the things that one major thing is that the builder's running into is the equity cap, which the people, I think it's either 10 or 15 years that they have to stay in that unit, or they do, basically they cannot capture the equity at the end. Basically, captures them in the neighborhood, possibly.
But if you look at, if you go back to this, you'll see that there are the integration of the smaller units are just set back in a little bit behind the garages of the two larger units. I mean, it's just, it's not something that I think that we've ever seen before, when usually we see the flat fronts of some of these townhouse communities. This one has dimension to it. As I said, lots of architectural lines, hip roofs, things that cost more to construct, but
make note that's real stone. So they didn't cut back on the extras or the basics for the workforce unit. And they complied with their architectural plan, and that's real stone. Oh, stone, mason stone. And again, it's a little smaller, and the unit's a little bit smaller, the garage is a little bit smaller, but the architecture's the same.
No, that's fine. Go ahead.
This is one of the workforce housing units under construction.
Most of what we saw there were two-story units. They have a final unit that they're building, maybe the last two units, that actually are ranch houses.
Look at the choices.
I think just about anybody could move into these. A lot of first floor masters, huge bedrooms on the second floor. The workforce housing has three bedrooms, two and a half baths, two bedrooms on the second floor, half bath on the first floor. All of them have garages. The smaller units have single car garages. The larger units have double car garages.
Question. Are these like slab on grade? Do they have basements in them?
They have basements. There's full basements.
Full basements.
And many of the basements are walkout basements.
As you can
but
see,
this is the...
See the one picture on the right, the workforce housing unit, the one in the center. Okay, and normally the regular A units are on each side, so there's no deviation.
And this is the ranch. This is one of the last ones that they're constructing. This is the ranch house. Even though you see dormers on the top, there is no second floor. That's just the attic space. But again, full basements underneath that. But I think they were telling us some of the people that wanted to buy into the workforce housing units, and when they got to the formula some of them were retired. One of them in particular that was very interested was a state trooper, retired state trooper. But when they got to the 15-year resale, they looked at the formula and just didn't think that financially it made sense to them. Now, because these were built under the original ordinance, he has the ability to rent them. But I do think that this is something that, if we're going to see, we now know that we have several workforce housing developments in beyond the planning stage, I mean, ready for construction, that we, I think we need to look at this formula and how it's affecting the sale of some of these homes. Because I, in my mind, the purpose of workforce housing was to get people into the market. We don't need to make them rich, but we don't need to have them feel like they're going to lose money by coming into this market.
Councilman Moretta.
Thank you. What was the price of the workforce housing homes?
I thought he said he had this, one of the smaller ones was $280, and they went up to the low threes.
Workforce
has to comply with the HUD guidelines, which I think is running about $280.
I think that's what the discussion was. Yes.
The maximum on the HUD is on the lending guidelines.
The next time somebody wants to buy one, send them out my neighborhood because they can afford it.
What is the density of the project overall?
It isn't much.
27 units,
27
are
on acreage?
Yeah, acreage density. That's dwelling units an acre.
I don't know, but there's a lot of open space. I was thinking it was a 14-acre or 17-acre site. And
we're not approving this.
We're going to take it apart.
Two units per acre.
I mean, one of the criticisms that's out there in the, you know, in the blogosphere and all this is that, you know, workforce housing is high density. I mean, I don't. This doesn't comport with high density to me.
This is,
you know, two dwelling units an acre.
Yeah.
Is nearly, you know.
Yeah, and part of it here is this is a very hilly terrain, so there probably were areas in here that they would not have been able to build. He originally was going to put 14 single family homes in here, and then converted to workforce housing and has 27, but the density it is not a high density development at all.
And I would say roughly, only unfamiliar with the area because I grew up out that area, probably around 14 acres, but there's a lot of open space involved
right.
in this project.
Obviously, you can see.
Councilman Hollins?
Yeah, I honestly want to thank Councilman Kilpatrick for bringing this presentation forward. Everyone knows that workforce housing has been demonized in so many areas in Newcastle County. And to see that it is working, it can work, and the General Manager of Community Services is aware of some of the challenges. And we've had some discussions about trying to make some adjustments, some amendments to the workforce housing legislation so that it would not be a burden to the developers or to the families who desire to live in one of those developments. So he's very aware of that. We've had discussions about that. So there will be some amendments coming forward. The other thing is, we're talking about this, I just want to say to council members that 2 weeks from today, HUD will be here on the Community Services Committee meeting to discuss Newcastle County's mandate to affordable housing. And I think a lot of people are under the impression that you only have to have affordable housing if you're using HUD funding. That's far from the case. The county council itself can find itself a liability to this government if we don't, in fact, have affordable housing in Newcastle County. And it's not just for the HUD mandate. There's a federal mandate under the Fair Housing Act. And we'll talk about some of the things that have happened so far and the number of dollars that are coming into Newcastle County, aside from the CDBG, but the dollars that we talked about today in NSP programs, these are all federal funds. So I found it to be, I think, a helpful thing, an educational thing, that HUD comes to Delaware, to Newcastle County. They'll be here in 2 weeks to explain to us what our mandate really is. So there's no confusion going forward. And part of my concern, to be very honestly, is when developers come forward and they decide they want to switch from the HUD application, they let it expire, they come forward, and we simply stamp it and say it's okay. And I see that as an impediment to fair housing, and these are the kind of issues that HUD will be talking about 2 weeks from today.
Co-Chair Retta.
Thank you. Can anybody answer the original development that they want to build, how much are the homes going to be in there?
Sean?
I apologize. I missed your question, Mr. Graham.
Well, originally it was supposed to be like Councilwoman said, it was like 14 homes.
What were the price of the homes that they were going to build in? Does anybody have that?
Councilor Reda, I don't believe that was priced out. I think that would have been what would have been permitted under a straight S zoning plan, probably an open space. But I don't think that was priced out.
And I don't ever remember hearing what prices. The price point was going to be on those. I mean,
I'm figuring 14 homes are probably over 300.
They probably would have been much larger homes.
Yeah.
And they probably would have certainly cost more. I mean, this option provided an alternative with more reasonably priced homes overall, I think, not just in terms of the workforce, but in terms of the other units.
Right.
But understanding that this is a very small development, it is the first in workforce housing, and as we've said around this table, there is also always that question about, well, what is workforce housing going to be? What is it going to look like? I think that sometimes an unknown causes more fear than necessary, but I'm shocked, I have to say, that this is such a beautiful development, and I think that if anybody looks at this and wants to, you know, show people that workforce housing is here, it's working under the ordinance that was originally passed, certainly will work under the amended ordinance, but I can't imagine that any of us envisioned that this would be the first workforce housing community in the county, and that it's got all of the amenities that anybody could possibly want. And I was just extremely impressed with it, and, you know, asked if we could go in and look at it and think about moving.
Councilman Bell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You know, I think in concept and when you look at the appearance and everything, it certainly is impressive. I think one of the obstacles that we face today that we didn't probably 3, 4, 5 years ago now is that housing has become more reasonable. And so when we talk about affordable and reasonable, what you're finding, I think, and this may very well be the case here, is that a lot of folks have bought in, but yet the workforce portion of it, because of some of the requirements, are kind of hindering folks buying into it, and they're actually now renting them units. And so I guess the thing is that it's probably we're going to come to a point in time when I think we've got to kind of really envision what is the housing market today, how reasonable, how affordable, and maybe even more affordability for what the pricing may be today. But it seems to me that one of the issues we have to face is there's more reasonable, more affordable housing today than there was 4 or 5 years ago. And I think this is an excellent example of how it can look and appear, but the bottom line is we have to be concerned about is the 14 or 15 units become rental units rather than actually folks owning their own home.
And that is a concern to me. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, as we've talked about, that goes with the formula that's associated with workforce housing. And I think, as we talked about earlier today, that, you know, land use is pretty much a working, you know, living documents, and we need to be able to fluctuate and come up with the best for everyone as we go through amending those documents. But I was extremely impressed that it's on the ground, that, you know, people are living in it. It's a beautiful community, and I think that you don't have to think about inexpensive housing or workforce housing as always being just boxy, no architectural design, because obviously it can be done. You know, there's a pride in ownership from Mara with this development. I mean, he likes showing it to people. It's a beautiful, beautiful development.
Okay. Any questions from members of the public? Yes.
Would you mind? I'm Peggy Schultz. Could you locate it on the map, please, and tell what level it's in?
Not too far from you.
It's pretty close.
Jim will do that because I'm not good at maps. I don't have big words.
Yep. It's roughly in this area right here, in the red.
Thank you.
All right. Yes, sir.
Yep. Thanks. I'm Larry Tarabico, so I wasn't going to say anything, but I've worked extensively on the workforce housing legislation. I just wanted to, I agree with the comments you made, Councilman Kilpatrick. I just wanted to point out for everybody that the initial ordinances that Councilman Hollins introduced, the initial versions, address all of the concerns that are now have surfaced. But the prior administration, and I don't mean the Clark administration, the one before that, commandeered that ordinance and made changes to it that we knew were going to be problems, but I think Councilman Hollins attempted to please everybody and to get an ordinance adopted that now has the problems that weren't in his initial ordinances. Those did not exist. So I think from what I've heard, and I haven't spoken with Councilman Hollins about it, but it's nice to hear that we're taking a look at trying to ameliorate some of those concerns, because to address your comment, it's not a problem for the developers, but it is a problem for the home buyers.
Right.
And that's the issue. That's the only issue, really. Otherwise, it's a very good ordinance, but some of it needs to be addressed.
Good.
But it wasn't what we originally were considering, and it ended up being because I think some folks got involved in that ordinance who didn't understand this industry.
And now that we know...
And perhaps we can, now that we know more about what the presentation was about, it might be a better topic on community services for a future day, as opposed to if we're going to get into the dynamics of workforce housing. So I didn't know when you asked to put it on here. If I'd have known, you know, we were going to dive in depthly into the workforce housing, you know, it probably would have been better, because we could have had the members of community services here to actually talk about what the median price is and workforce housing and all that kind of stuff too. So,
and basically I wanted to show that we have a workforce housing development, although it's small, it's on a smaller piece of land, but I just thought it was really a great presentation from a developer for this. I mean, he could have put up, you know, the three-story boxes, the narrow boxes, and said it's done, and he could have walked away and made his money off of it. But I think that no matter what we build, whether it's workforce housing, traditional homes, townhomes, whatever it is, if we see that there's a pride from the developer in what he's doing, I think that's reflected in how their developments ultimately look. And that may be where we need to get to, is, you know, the personal pride in the projects that people are doing.
Yeah, sure. Councilman Cartier?
Just to react off that last statement, I think incorporating maybe some architectural details as part of a project could be a workforce project where we ensure that you get a nice appearance. I think my perspective on this is that we did this initiative reacting to the price of new construction, new home ownership in New Castle County, going beyond the means of the bulk of the people in this county. And that was the impulse, as I recall, why we went down this road. And I've been sitting here since 2008 or so, wondering, you know, how do we do this? What is the initiative? What does it look like post-crash? Because now we're in a very different world, just to reflect Councilman Bell's ideas. And so whoever wants to take this on, I'm interested in seeing how we do this and what affordable housing looks like as an initiative. I know people hate that word. I don't know. You know, as we go forward, one of the things I can tell you folks, in this down economy that we have in New Castle County, the need for affordable rental is huge. Not only from people who work, from the retirees that are out there who are not doing so well. So we've got a mix of concerns, and home ownership is one component of it.
Well, I agree. Let me know what you come up with. Councilman Smiley?
Not that I'm offended by Councilman Patrick's comments, but I would just say, when referring to developer, I would say, you know, the product that he or she developed.
Thank you for that.
I just want to be fair here.
Yes.
Nobody's renting anything or buying anything unless there's a market. yes, sir?
Just
Sean Tucker for the record, just one observation about the rental versus non-rental situation we're in, and Dave can correct me if I'm wrong, Dave Culver, but I don't believe there's any workforce housing plans pending under the new ordinance that prohibits rentals. Is that true?
They did accord. No, currently there are no pending workforce housing applications.
Okay.
Since the ordinance has been changed.
Right.
There,
so
one resale.
Right, and one of the fears I think out there is that you just can't sell them, or you might not be able to sell them. In this case, my client Joe Mara stuck his neck out a little bit in this unknown world with the comfort that he at least could rent if he couldn't sell. And so with that provision now out, and that's a public policy decision you all have to make, but with that out, it appears that it may have now directed people away from this option. Maybe that's good, maybe that's bad, depending on your perspective, but just something to think about, I think, as you wrestle with any changes in the future.
Thank you. Councilman Hollins?
I'll be quiet after this, I promise. But I think that there's just a perception that when you say the word rental, that it's going to be poor people or it's going to be Section 8. But rentals, DuPont rent homes for their executives. So rent is just not for, and I know the presentation we had from someone from the AG's office, and he repeatedly referred to renters. All the drug problems in the city of Wilmington is because of their renters. And I'm thinking there's got to be some other common denominator other than the fact that they are renters. There are high rent areas all over Newcastle County, but in his mind, you know, all of these problems are simply because these people are renters. I just think we need to be more educated about the people that we live with.
Thank you. Any questions from the public? Okay.
Call on me whatever way you want.
Be careful.
I just want to say, Jay, with Bayberry, Jay Shinetra's workforce housing is right.
It's the old plan.
It's the old plan. I'm saying there's, you know.
Okay, anybody have anything under other? Any public comment today? Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, if I may, to a subject that hasn't been discussed, maintenance corporations. I need some help. As a citizen, I'm here. I'm appearing. First off, my name is Art Wilson. I'm appearing as a citizen of Newcastle County. Maintenance corporations. Provided for by the county. I come under a maintenance corporation. So far, I don't have a problem. Maintenance corporations begin to run amok with what they spend their money on. And yet, I'm obligated to pay that regardless. We're spending money on bus trips. We're spending money on paying transportation for folks to medical appointments, etc. We're paying for meals. I brought this to the local organization. I brought it to the county land use department, to the community services. They tell me it's up to me to enforce it, to bring enforcement on my own. Well, we're not talking about thousands of dollars here in my particular case. And to hire an attorney, I would have to spend thousands of dollars to enforce something that, frankly, comes under Article 40, Chapter 27. Not asking for direct enforcement, but I think we either need to give people like myself some avenue of relief so we don't have to pay for all sort of frivolous expenditures, and they're only going to go on what? You know how these things work, quite frankly? And right now, what I'm talking about is de minimis. But a minimum, maintenance corporations should be able or should be required to separate the so-called civic entities, civic expenses, civic responsibilities from the maintenance corporation fees, which I'm obligated to pay and or can be assessed for and or put a lien on my property. I don't know where else to go for help absent hiring an attorney. And again, I don't want to mislead anyone on council. We're talking about currently a de minimis amount, but where does it stop? Bus trips to New York are not part of a maintenance corporation. Providing folks trips or transportation to their doctor's appointments or to medical appointments is certainly apple pie and the American flag. I've done it for members of my community. I'd do it tomorrow. Frankly, if I had to buy their meals, I would just assume go to the grocery store and pay for their food, not be assessed for it. And I don't know the circumstances. Now, as a snide comment, most of the folks in my neighborhood could not only afford to buy and sell me, they wouldn't even worry about the chain. So we're not talking about a workforce housing situation. We're not talking about a welfare situation here. We're talking about folks got some money. There's not many people in my neighborhood don't own 2 and 3 cars, and I do live in an over 55 community, for those of you who don't know. And most of those cars are Mercedes or Lexus or whatever. They're not too many Chevys or low-end Fords there. So I don't know where to turn. Again, I suppose I could spend the money, but I'd like to see the law changed, tightened up, modified. I'd like to see a proposal from, and I presume that this was the appropriate committee to start with, to maybe get it more clear. I've seen a number of proposals in a different status other than this of Newcastle County to clarify the law. With due respect, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, can we get some help with this? Because I'm sure that I'm not the only one who has a problem. I'm the only one who has the privilege and the time, I guess, to appear before you all and have your ear. So with that, I know time's short. Thank you.
Councilman Smiley?
I would just say it's my understanding that the law does restrict what the maintenance corporation can spend the funds on. Have you been to the Attorney General's office?
No, I have not.
Because I would suggest to you I have an issue not like this. Basically, it's competing to each other who has authority. And the last email I saw out of the Attorney General's office was they would not get involved unless if there was an allegation of fraud, misuse of funds, improper spending. So you may want to take a trip across the plaza, at least give that a shot.
With due respect, Councilman, I came here because it was a county it's ordinance, a county provision that created the maintenance corporation.
It's a state
law.
Well,
we oversee.
Yeah, and Mr. Wilson is referring to actual ordinance.
Yeah, but I'm just saying when it comes to the misuse of funds by a governing entity, and it is a governing entity because they're elected. So I'm just saying the AG, that's the latest I saw in the issue I have going on. So I just, it's worth a shot. You asked any suggestions where you could go.
Yeah.
Short of where I would tell you if you and I were alone, I would
just
the trip across the plaza. And no, I don't live in his neighborhood. You heard about the money.
Councilman Powers.
Councilman Bell and myself, with all the problems at Odessa National, really the best way to go would be the AG's because it's falling under corporate law for the maintenance court. So, I'm not trying to pass the buck, but telling you how what we've gotten resolved, Councilman Bell, has all been through the AG's office.
And Mr. Wilson, please, if you end up going there, share it back with us. I've had no luck with them. I extensively addressed this issue that you're bringing up, and why is that in county code, and why does it mention that, and why does it state that it's in our land use, and we've done this and all, and then we kind of take a hands-off approach to it. I addressed it extensively with then when Wendy Danner was over here, and I went back over and I worked with Brett Wilson, went over and over and over. Literally just came back and boiled down to what you've heard here. It's even though our county code really just mirrors what the state law was, and it's actually the state law that mandates it. And I asked, well, why do they pay incorporation fees if that office does nothing but accept them? And I was told they do nothing but accept them. They'll literally do nothing about it, because that's where I tried to go through for it and say, why wouldn't they enforce some of this? If it was there, why couldn't a member of the community have some type of a venue they could go and say, listen, because I've had that issue. I had a community where a house caught on fire, burned down. Community did a huge drive, took up all this money, went out, came to theirs. As Americans, we do that. We're known for that. But yet, they came back later after the investigation and found out that the husband was actually doing drugs and had a Bunsen burner or whatever it was, and that's what caught the house on fire. So, I mean, you're right. You don't know what the circumstances are involved when communities come up. But, I had Councilman Hollins, Councilman Cardin, and Councilman Moyer.
Well, if it is, by the way, when you said doing drugs, what did you whisper? But if it is, in fact, the state issue, then why would not we direct Mr. Wilson to a state representative or state senator to get the law amended at the state level if it's, that's what's driving this. If we, since we can't, then they can if it's their law.
And Ms. Wilson, I do understand, too. I think they formed a task force in Dover on this. So when you do go there, you may ask about that. Quickly, let me get the other council members. Councilman Cartier?
Now, I don't have, you know, the maintenance corporation issue so predominating, but I have condo associations. And let me tell you, there are plenty of problems with a lot of these condo associations, misgovernance and misuse of funds and controversy. And, you know, I don't know. It's out there. You know, whether the AG's office really wants to get involved in these things, probably not. And, you know, I would encourage you to go there and then like to hear what happens. But I think just generally there should be some kind of civil process for this because it's sort of, you know, we know the potential exists. We're with the maintenance corporations and condo associations, you got a proliferation of these things, but where's the legal processes really to govern, you know, misuse or rogue boards, or it's just not out there.
And we went to the AG, we were told they were not looking to an allegation. You have to take them factual documentation. Councilman Weiner.
Thank you. I'm going to give you an opinion, not as an attorney, but my understanding of the law, and that is that if the AG's office decides not to exercise prosecutorial discretion to prosecute, then you have a private action for violation of contract. You have two private entities, your maintenance corporation or your civic association, you can have separate ones, the people who are offending and you as a litigant as well. And the reason why county government doesn't get involved is county government doesn't get involved in private contractual disputes as between parties. We don't pick sides. That's not the function of county government. Because the maintenance corporations were created by state, the prosecutor can decide to prosecute or not. But if it doesn't rise to that level, then I'm going to tell you something you need to hear but you don't want to hear. It falls on your shoulders, because let the buyer beware. When you buy real estate, you bought subject to maintenance corporation guidelines, and you bought it with all the downside and upside that comes with a maintenance corporation or a condo association, and you always have your private contractual right and your private rights to litigate in court. Now, that's not what you wanted to hear, because that's going to cost you money, but I'm telling you what I think is the correct answer.
Did I have Councilman Hollins?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Gotcha, okay. Councilwoman Kilpatrick?
I think that Councilman Weiner covered some of what I was thinking, but in...
Okay, then.
In
who else?
Second.
Okay. In dealing with some maintenance corporations, and I for some reason I thought that there was a law that dealt with this as to what maintenance associations can collect dues for, and that you can then form a civic association and collect money for that, but not mandated collection.
Correct.
For all of those auxiliary things.
Yes.
Is there not, and I guess this goes to Bob since he was...
Yeah, no, I said
that. I mean, is there not something that says what they can use it for within the law?
Well, under maintenance corporation, yes, it's very specifically delineated, and you know there are other attorneys in the room. But Sean, I think it's very clear that it's stated as what fiduciary duties the maintenance corporation has and what they could spend it for. And it sounds like to me, and I don't want to opine, but it sounds like they may be violating the trust that comes with the fiduciary duty. But then again, the AG's office has discretion whether to prosecute or not.
But then they can, in many maintenance corporations, and within the deeds, they say what your fees are, or what your cap on your fees are, or what you can, the increases that you can have on an annual basis, or whatever it is. So anything beyond that, then would be, you could ask to have the civic association formed and take the rest of that funding and put it into the civic.
That's
part
correct.
Of that,
and there are communities in my district and elsewhere that have done exactly that.
And they're in mine also.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, and we want to move this along a little bit. And I have Kristen over here who has some comments too to have. But I think we've migrated into the fact we're agreeing with Mr. Wilson, you know, they can't do this. And that's exactly what Mr. Wilson came here
you know,
to ask. How do we stop it?
Kristen Noir, Executive Office. I just wanted to reach out to Mr. Wilson. If you want to talk to me after the meeting, there is an informal task force down in Dover that is looking at all the different problems and issues that maintenance corporations are having throughout the state, and I'd be more than happy to hook you up with the right people.
I don't want to see it. Good. All right. Councilman Cartier?
Does that include condos? It should.
Right now, it's not.
But they spent 2 years working on a redraft of that.
Nobody understands
it. And it does nothing.
It. Yes, nobody understands
it. No, they understand it. They understand it does nothing.
It was 1,000 people.
I thought it was about to get backhanded. I'm ready to go home with you.
We're going
to
need to wrap this up soon. Councilwoman Kilpatrick?
The legislation for condos, which is referred to as Dukaya, I mean, you have to have been built after a certain date. It's not retroactive.
Well, yeah.
However, you as a condo association could choose to go into Dukaya, which then gives you some guidelines on what you can do with your funding and resolution and all of that. But it's really uniform property under the
yes.
condos versus the maintenance association under developments.
Thank you very much. Additional questions, public comment? Seeing none, see a motion?
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye. Not voting.
So 5 o'clock downstairs?
Right here?
Okay.
So that's
yep.
Blank spot.
I'm leaving after they do it, and I'm going to go to dinner somewhere. I'm just going to go to the box.